I spent a lot of time and energy in my teens and early 20s trying to end my life. I am a survivor of multiple suicide attempts. I've been in multiple mental hospitals. I was really afraid of living. We're talking about living out loud and living fiercely. I was terrified of living. So I sought to end my own life often. And it was extremely confusing. I had suicidal thoughts as far back as like elementary school. I remember planning my own death as early as the fifth grade. And nobody else was talking about that.
Life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. For the Dr. Stem Show, we'll give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
Life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Welcome to the Dr. Stem Show, a show that is geared to give you a voice and the hopeless hope. My mission in this show, which is the first time that we're doing this show today, is to inspire especially teenagers and adults to live a healthy, emotionally, and spiritually balanced life. And how do we do this? We do this by having guests, like the guest that we have today, Mr. Andy Grant, that we'll be talking to in a little bit, who is a motivational speaker, an energy coach, and I'll give you that background as well when I start. But this show in general is to inspire, motivate, empower, educate, and hopefully to encourage you to live your best life. So Andy, welcome to the Dr. Stem Show.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stem. It's a pleasure and privilege to be here with you.
Thank you. I call you my divine connection because the way that we met and the programs that I've been involved in because of meeting with you have been amazing. And that's why I chose to start this show with you. Do you remember when we met?
I sure do.
That was what, 2 years ago?
At least. I think it was more.
It was more. I just wanted to, the way that I wanted to introduce you is to have you talk about your friend that you travel with. I think that was the most unique thing that I'll always remember about you.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So I travel with a plastic friend of mine named Larry. He's Larry the Lizard, and he just is a great conversation starter, and he's featured in children's books. We have the Globetrotting Adventures of Larry the Lizard. And it's just always been a fun way to, I call him the international icebreaker, because I've been privileged enough to do a lot of international travel. Larry and I have been to, I think, 15 different countries, and I just have this plastic lizard hanging from my bag or sometimes from my neck, and people ask, what's up with that?
So, it was so scary. I was so scared when I first saw it, and then, you know, starting to talk to you, I said, oh, he's actually a great guy, but I was scared of that plastic thing because I thought it was real.
Yeah. I'm surprised so many people think that. Going through airport security, a lot of people do a second take, like, oh no!
So I was one of those that screamed when I saw that lizard. But let me tell the audience a little bit about you, Andy. Andy Grant is a best-selling author, an award-winning speaker, transformational energy coach, Akashic records reader and suicide prevention activist. He holds certificates in positive psychology, the Enwork and Coaching System, Akashic Records, Soul Entertainment, Infinite Possibilities, and Reiki, as well as other leadership programs and energy work modalities. He also is the founder of an ebook. Is it an ebook, Real Man Feel?
No, Real Men Feel is a weekly podcast and a movement and a website. So it's really about encouraging men to come out of the emotional and spiritual closet, encouraging men to acknowledge, feel, and express all of their emotions. because most men are taught that only a few emotions are proper for men and other emotions are proper for women. And that's a lot of hooey.
It's a lot of hooey, and it's much needed hooey. And what I have decided after looking at everything that, you know, you have done and everything, is probably to title this show Living Fiercely Out Loud, because then what you, you know, I mean, your books, your life, and everything that we're going to talk about here shows, you know, people and guides people to live their life out loud, fiercely, right?
Beautiful. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So, you know, I don't know how to even start this, but it's almost like, you know, I mean, I'm still in a dream phase because we recently lost one of our hosts, Kelly Murphy, who was the host of the show, you know, High Heels, High Hopes at America Out Loud. And the way that she died is still a mystery, even to myself, a 25-year, you know, mental health professional that, you know, it cannot grasp how it happened because she committed suicide. And the reason why I also wanted Andy to be our guest today is he can help us to make sense out of it, or to try and make sense out of it. We understand that, you know, I mean, it's a way of life, that a way that people will go. Some people will go, but I just can't understand it. So, Andy, I know you wrote a book, Still Here, and it says how to succeed in life after failing at suicide.
Right.
Why did you write that book?
I wrote it because I spent a lot of time and energy in my teens and early 20s trying to end my life. I am a survivor of multiple suicide attempts. I've been in multiple mental hospitals. I was really afraid of living. We're talking about living out loud and living fiercely. I was terrified of living. So I sought to end my own life often. And it was extremely confusing. I had suicidal thoughts as far back as like elementary school. I remember planning my own death as early as the fifth grade. And nobody else was talking about that. No, the only time as a teenager that I met anybody openly talking about suicidal feelings or thoughts or inclinations was in mental hospitals. Mm. So that made it seem even crazy and more wrong, and that I was just so horribly defective and there was something wrong with me. But you know, I happiness is a learnable skill.
Yes.
I did not know that. I had no idea that was true. And I find that the best suicide prevention tool is enjoying life.
Yes.
And again, from my experience and all the people that I've talked to and met, I believe that the cause, the root cause of suicide is a complete lack of self-love. It's that isolation, that feeling of disconnection, the feeling of meaninglessness and hopelessness. And when you are in that hopeless, helpless state, it feels like you have no more options except to end your life. Because that's like it's like the last thing that you can have some control or some power over. And I'm just here to assure everybody that is a lie. We always have infinite opportunities, infinite choices, infinite possibilities available to us. It's just our limited thinking, and we can become so harsh and judgmental of ourselves that we only see our weakest, our lowest aspects.
So I think, you know, I mean, with that point that you just made, I think that's what makes it so difficult with the situation that we just had, because he was a vivacious, full of life, a lady that had plans. We had spoken about working together at America Out Loud. We were planning retreats. We were planning to meet the following week. And I mean, there were plans for the future. Mm-hmm. And very happy and everything. So then you think, okay, somebody who's suicidal is not going to make long-term plans, is what they usually say. I mean, is that true? Could that be that somebody could be so happy and so alive and then take their life?
Yeah, I've made plenty of attempts despite having plans. And you know, let me back up for a second, because
okay.
I come across a lot of people that can't understand why someone would do that.
Yeah.
And and I say good, right? I don't want you to understand that.
Yeah.
That means you've never contemplated that. Like, you can't see that as an option. That's a great thing.
You're right.
So don't try so hard to feel someone else's pain, right? Mm. Just know that, wow, there was so much pain there that they thought that was their best solution.
Yes.
So live your life even more fiercely and out loud.
Yes.
As a way to honor them. Don't follow them. Don't try to feel that despair. Just be glad that, wow, I cannot relate to that at all. You know, it's kind of a fallacy that someone who's suicidal is just always depressed and that's all they think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were plenty of times that I would put some energy into some plan, or yeah, I'm gonna go to college, and I want to become an actor, I want to direct movies, and yeah, I'm excited, and it just doesn't last, and I do my best to be positive, to make a plan, and then I'm just, oh, but here I am back alone with my thoughts that I suck, that I can't do what I want to do, and that I'm no good, and that nobody loves me, and it's not worth it. And that was the big thing for me. It's not worth it. So I could have grandiose plans and visions, but at the deepest truth that was actually a lie, but I thought it was the truth that I didn't share with other people, was that I can't do that. Like, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough. I can't. So it doesn't surprise me that someone who's big and has plans and is seen as outgoing, that they would have a very different inner life.
Yeah, you know, after you leave, they leave everyone else and go into the darkness or the light of their own space in their own home. What happens there?
And you don't know until you ask.
Yeah.
You know, it's another big myth that to talk about suicide means you're going to give people the idea and it's going to trigger them to take an action. And like, no, like that thought's already in somebody, or it's a thought that, like you said, you can't even understand it. Doesn't make any sense, right?
Well, go back to the book. I know you pointed out six main points in that book. Can you at least describe in general what those 6 points are? Because I think being the holidays now, there will be people that will benefit from those, because this is the time, unfortunately, that a lot of people will go through the blues of the holiday.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, that really comes from, you know, comparison.
Yeah.
And if you watch too many movies and shows, you know, there's this idealized notion of the holidays and being surrounded by family and love and presents and affluence. And, you know, if that's not your experience, you can end up feeling really low. And, you know, I have felt that way. But so I call them the six keys to loving your life. Again, because I believe that the best suicide prevention is you enjoying your life. It's in you enjoying being you, right? So the six keys are choice, awareness, feel fully, get physical, creativity, and explore alternatives. Now, some of them are pretty obvious, but let me begin with choice, because from the outside looking in, choice seems obvious, but as a depressed individual, I had no idea that I could choose to feel better.
Mm.
Right? I was told that my chemistry was wrong, that my brain was defective, that I was broken and flawed. So I saw that, well, then there's no choice. This is how I am. I'm always going to be this way, and this feels freaking horrible. So I have no choice. But we really do have a choice, right? I'm not going to dispute the notion of our chemicals, of brain function, but which comes first, right? Does my chemistry make my thinking, or does my thinking make my chemistry?
Yeah.
So I have found through my own experiments in living that I could choose a happier thought and feel better. So I can boost my own chemistry, right? We're not just some meat suit. We're not some random collection of chemicals. We are much more powerful than that. So the first thing is I decide that I want to feel better, because I did not make that choice. I thought I was doomed. I thought I had suicidal thoughts because I'm supposed to act on them. But they feel horrible, because they're not what you're really meant to do, right? That's why it feels bad. So the second choice, the second key is awareness. Being willing to be aware of my own habitual negative thoughts. Being able to kind of witness my thoughts, my emotions, experiences, and realize that I'm not them, right? Like, people don't say, hi, I'm diabetes, but I felt like I was depression. I thought I you know, I'm suicidal. I thought it was me. I thought it was my identity. But it was just a feeling. It was just an isolated experience. So I invite everyone to raise their awareness of all the good in the world, right? What you tend to notice is what you'll notice more of. So when I was only aware of, again, my constant mantra was that life sucks. And when I was, if I was allowing myself only to be aware of that, that continued to be my experience.
So am I understanding you to say, especially with the awareness, that when one is aware that you do feel suicidal thoughts or you have attempted suicide, when you are aware that those feelings come sometimes and that's how you feel, to be comfortable talking about it and, you know, trusting someone that can help you along the way, because now you are aware of how you feel and how, you know, it makes you feel.
Right.
It's almost like normalizing it, normalizing, you know, the feeling that I do experience these feelings. They are not me, but I feel.
Right. And when we keep it secret, when I keep it private, yeah. It's just this horrible thought that keeps ruminating and circulating in my head.
Yeah.
It's got nowhere to go. But when I'm willing to share it, and it can be sharing it out loud to someone you trust. You could call an anonymous hotline, mm-hmm. which I have done. They're fantastic.
Yes.
Right. It just, it gets it out of you. Right? You can relieve yourself of some of that pressure that feels like it's building. So you can do it verbally. You might do it via writing. A great journal. I would almost like write a suicide letter. I'd write everything I hate and everything I despise, and I'd just get it out of me, and I would burn it. I wouldn't like try to save that as some commemorative piece.
Yes.
But it was a way to get it out of me. Right?
That is always awesome, because we always encourage, as you know, I'm a licensed psychotherapist, so I do have a private practice where I work with people that also, you know, come in and present with suicidal ideations or attempts, yeah. You know. But then journaling is always a good thing. And as you know, Andy is saying, even, you know, seeing a therapist, seeing a counselor and talking to someone who is, you know, someone you can talk to in private, in confidence. But then, you know what, the one thing that we have to do, there's no secret in talking about that. If you are intending to harm yourself at that point, then right. That's the only time that we'll tell someone, but otherwise it's all in privacy.
Yep. And I just want to point out that, like, I used to think that asking for help was a sign of weakness, and it's not. It's the bravest thing you can do, right? The most courageous act a human being can make is to, you know, search for a way to feel better, to know that they're called to live and that they want to do it in a better feeling place, right? We're all worthy of feeling great. We're all worthy of feeling happy and joyous, right? And I really feel that that is our natural state, right? It's only, it's this illusion of when we focus on the bad, when we focus on, you know, how gross we feel when we look at temporary circumstances and decide that they shall never change. But, you know, this too shall pass.
It's temporary.
Yeah. And suicide has often been said that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Yes.
So sometimes, you know, and sometimes it takes a lot of effort, a lot of conscious choosing to just get through the next moment.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And that's okay. But be willing to ask for help. Call out for support, because you're worth it. And, you know, there were times when I really thought that my friends, my family, even the entire world would be better off without me. You know, so when someone does end their life, again, they think that they're helping others in this distorted way. They think that the weight of their sadness, that they're bothering people, that they're pulling others down. And if I just eliminate myself, everybody else will feel better.
Yeah.
But that's never the case. It's like, again, we really are all connected, right? There is this sense of oneness. There is this unity of the universe, of God, of source, whatever term you're comfortable with.
Yes.
So we're all connected. And when one's pained soul decides to like leave this physical realm to end their life, it hits people in a way that doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's different than other deaths. Yes. Because our brain strives to find a meaning, And again, unless you've felt that low, felt that despair, you can't find that meaning. So I encourage you to just, with love and compassion, see that for the mistake it is. See suicide for the mistake that it is. Don't try to understand it. Just know that, wow, they were in so much pain, and you know, I'm sad that they couldn't share that with me.
Yes.
But I'm going to live an even better life. I'm going to shine my light even brighter to honor that person that's not here with me any longer.
Well said. Well said. I know you had just gone to two. What was three again?
Feel fully. And by this, I mean be willing to fully feel all of your feelings.
Okay.
You know, I often, people talk about feeling overwhelmed often.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not really an emotion called overwhelm. Overwhelm is our resistance. It's our fear of feeling something that's showing up in the moment. So I found that depression and sadness were so, they would drain me so much because I actually wasn't allowing myself to feel them. You know, I'd be fighting it. I'd resist it. I would cry just enough to be able to get through that moment. I wouldn't let myself, all right, let's, how, what am I feeling? Right? What memory? What am I so afraid of? Allow myself to go there, to feel it fully. Because you know, and emotions, I like to call them energy in motion. That's what emotions are. So emotions want to pass through us, but often we'll stop it. So I'm not supposed to feel that grief. I don't want to feel that shame. I'm not supposed to feel that anger. So it gets stuck and it builds and it builds, and that all emotions eventually will be felt and they can come out in inopportune ways. But when we are willing to feel whatever emotion shows up, the moment it shows up, that emotion passes quicker and easier than we ever thought possible.
Well said, well said. Wow.
And the fourth key is a much more obvious one for people, and it's get physical. Because, you know, study after study shows that physical exercise can boost our mood, can improve our brain functionality, our immune system, even our level of intelligence, far better than any pill, any prescription. And if you've been depressed for a long time and just the thought of getting out of bed seems like a horrible joke, make yourself do it. Give someone permission to make you get up, right? And even just standing, just doing two push-ups or jumping in place, jumping up and down, doing a couple jumping jacks. Once you do something, just notice, do you feel better? Do you feel more alive, right? We're in physical form. We're meant to be physical, right? So don't ignore one aspect of your being and focus only on the mental, only on the emotional, right? Our bodies want to move just as our emotions do.
Yes.
And it can just be and if you maintain any sort of level of physical fitness activity, you're less likely to ever go back into a depressed state as well. And the fifth key is creativity. Because when I was looking back on my life, going, well, you know, I wasn't always miserable. When was I happy? When was I feeling joy as a child? And I realized I was always creating something. So again, we are creative, expressive beings. So you can draw, you can paint, you can write, you can sing, you can dance, you can garden, you can build things, right? Infinite opportunities for you to show your creative expression. And again, so another thing that can lead people to kind of feeling isolated, disconnected, feel depressed and low is not being creative. Everyone has dreams, especially as they're growing up. And so I encourage people often, like, go buy a toy. Go get some Legos. Go get some clay. Like, just get on the ground. Play with your dog. Play with children. Play with your grandchildren. Feel that natural joy again. Yeah. Like, you remember as kids how in any moment you could meet strangers and just invent a new game?
You didn't need stuff.
You didn't need rules. They were just like, oh, you be this guy and I'm going to be that guy and here's the scenario and we're just going to have fun all afternoon. Why does that go away?
Yeah.
Right? That ability doesn't go away. It's our willingness to go there. So let yourself have fun. Be creative. No one has to see it. It can be all secret, you know, but create, express yourself.
I love that. I love that. You know what I wanted to do as well, and thank you for sharing that, was to address this, you know, I mean, taboo topic that most families, we won't talk about it. And most people believe that, you know what, it never happens in my family, it will never happen in my family. And what happens is it's real and it can happen in your family. So just to be, you know, aware and to know some of the things that Andy has been discussing, you know, here with us in his book, Still Here, How to Succeed in Life After Failing at Suicide. I hope that, you know, that will be helpful for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you know, in the suicide prevention community, there's a lot of discussion on the best words and proper ways, and you know, it's really frowned upon to talk about failing at suicide any longer, and they just want to say unsuccessful or completed by suicide. But when I made my suicide attempts and I survived them, I felt like a failure, right? I can't even do that right. What's wrong with me? You know, I wasn't having the experiences of, you know, I woke up in a hospital like, oh, good, thank God, I'm alive. I see the light. Yay, hallelujah. I was like, no, I was pissed.
That's interesting.
I was disappointed. It took me, and this is not a path I recommend, and I hope people don't have to go there as I did, but it took me multiple failed attempts before I began to realize that, well, maybe I'm supposed to be here. Mm. You know, maybe there's a better way that I can navigate and live my life. And that's what started it. So, you know, in the introduction, all the wonderful things I've experienced and the places I've done and the books I've read and the classes I teach, all fantastic things. I really love life, but I was not always this way. So, and no matter how low you have ever felt, no matter how low you feel right now, you can feel better, right? It always, life does get better if we're open to it. If we allow it, if we raise our awareness, if we make choices that feed our joy and our love and our expansion.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Well, it's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. You'll find a whole host of shows and a lineup of great content back at AmericaOutLoud.com. You are tuned in to the Dr. Stem Show. To reach Dr. Stem or her guest, please email us at drstem@americaoutloud.com. Now, back to Dr. Stem for more support, confidence, and hope.
We are a part of a great group that actually encourages life, or as we are calling it today, living fearlessly out loud. And that group is the Project Positive Change, which Andy introduced me. Tell me a little bit about that group so the audience can have options on how and where to find the ways, means, motivation, inspiration of living your life fearlessly out loud.
Cool. Yeah, I'm a visionary, which means I'm a founding member of Project Positive Change. We have an active Facebook group, and projectpositivechange.com is a public website. But it's full of people who want to better the lives of others, the lives of themselves, the want to raise the consciousness. So you'll find such an assortment of people that are kind of doing, you know, the out there woo-woo stuff like me with the Akashic Records, and you'll find business coaches, you'll find radio hosts, you'll find social media experts, you'll find all sorts of amazing people sharing their gifts, sharing their creativity, helping to raise the level of enjoyment, of passion, of love, and of joy on the planet. And it's this wonderful homegrown group that of people just keep coming to it. It keeps building. It's one of the most powerful collections of people I've ever come across.
Yeah, and myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, even myself. So I know you and your wife, Lori, you're both energy coaches, right?
Right.
What is an energy coach, and how does that help someone that's listening today?
Great. So everything's rooted in energy.
Yes.
Like science tells us this, spirituality tells us this, right? So whatever you're thinking, whatever thoughts, whatever's in your way, it's rooted in energy. And, you know, I discovered energy work literally to save my own life. I was battling depression, battling suicidal thoughts. I hadn't made an attempt since my early 20s, but still I would get depressed. I would feel suicidal well into my late 30s. And it was finally discovering energy work, the notion that I was open to other people's energies, that I was feeling depression and sadness, and it wasn't really me. I was picking up the pain of others. So I had to learn to control my energy, to let energy flow through me, and to separate the energy of what I've experienced to the energy of what I've wanted. So I became a coach, and I took this year-long program to help me. But I realized how powerful it was, so I made a career change, became an energy coach, and I can tap into the energy of a person or situation. I can help guide people through to separate who they really are from the energy, the crud, the stories, all the blocks that they've picked up from others, from past experiences, and that they can continue to take with them. So it's as if we can carry a false energy story that covers us from seeing who we really are.
And I was going to say, you know, sort of about that, you know, I was one that experienced it with you and your wife at a retreat that we did last year. Mm-hmm. And what did you call that retreat again? Because I can never pronounce the name.
Yeah, I really chose a tongue twister. It was the Ultimate Energetic Entrepreneur Palooza.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And that was the first time we had done that event. And we were bringing business skills together with energy work. Right? Because you can energetically pave the way for your business growth and expansion, for your personal growth and expansion, right? Everything is rooted in energy. So when you allow yourself to open up, when you allow yourself to meditate, when you allow yourself to feel the connection to everything that is, life flows easier. Mm. Business flows easier. Love flows easier, right? And it really is experiential. You know, I often, energy work is much better experienced than it is explained. And I didn't believe in it. I didn't know what it meant until I had experiences of it. And, you know, in fact, everything I share in the book, everything I do with myself on a daily basis is something that I used to make fun of or not believe in it at all until I tried it and had an experience and realized that, wow, I feel better having this experience. I feel better having this awareness that everything's rooted in energy than I did ever thinking, well, no, everything just stinks. I'm just a horrible person. I'm just this bag of bones. I just want this experience to end. There's no point, right? That does not feel good.
Yeah. And I think openness as well, because for me, it was being open and learning something new that would help me know who I really am and what it is that I'm supposed to do with my life. So I know after attending, you know, that retreat that, you know, you did, I was able to tap into the energy of who I really am and what my heart desires. And one of those things was to move from Massachusetts to Florida. And you know what? Just to tell you and your wife, thank you. I am living in Florida right now, and I couldn't have done it looking at it last year before I attended the retreat. I didn't even see it, but here I am, and it happened.
Yeah, I remember you speaking of it like it was just this impossibility. No way, could it happen? Like, sure, you just decide right now. You can go to Florida. It's like, you know.
It was hard. I have family, and you know, I mean, what are they going to say, and what are they going to think? And but my heart was set in Florida. That's what I wanted, but I didn't want to disappoint. Of course, you know, you have these values, you have these beliefs, and limiting beliefs, and everything. Yeah. And what I like about that energy was when I tapped into my energy, what felt good was leaving everything and moving to Florida.
Right. Yeah. That's a great way to put it, because the essence of energy work is getting in touch with your heart.
Yeah.
Right? It's living via your heart, living via how you feel as opposed to how you think. Right? Because even the things that were holding you back, you were thinking how other people would think about you.
Yep.
It was all this mental game. Right? And that mental energy, which is just this continuous lie and guessing and pretending that you can read the future of other people's thoughts. And if everyone allowed themselves to live from their heart, to take actions that felt good, everybody around you would feel good for you and with you and follow you too. Right?
And it gets you to a place where when you feel good about your decision, you can now feel good about those that do not see or feel good about what it is that you have done. And you allow them to feel the way that they feel until they can get to understand or just to allow you to be you. Because at the end of the day, you do have to be you.
Right. Yeah. And we're not responsible for anybody else's emotions.
No.
Right? But that's something that, especially a lot of families, friends, we're taught that. You know, don't make me angry. Don't make me upset.
Exactly.
You know, we make ourselves. Yeah, we make ourselves feel whatever we're feeling.
Yeah.
You know, to try to blame someone else or believe that it's somebody else, like, that's just giving away your power. That's denying your divinity, right? It's denying your powerful true self.
But then what happens? I happen to have a family, you know, that probably just say, that's damn, she's crazy and she's going to do what she wants anyway. But then there's some people that would have made a decision like I made or want to go with their heart and make those decisions, and then the whole family don't talk to them. They don't want anything to do with them. What happens then? What next?
Well, that's fine. So when you're really making choices from your heart that serve you,
yes,
what anyone else thinks, it can't be part of it. And first of all, I believe those are temporary circumstances.
Yes.
And that anyone living from their higher self, from a higher calling, really taking inspired steps, everyone else will come around if they're meant to.
Yeah.
Like, if someone else is going to watch Dr. Stem for decades and decades feeling envious and jealous and mad that she left me, and maybe on the last day they live, on their life, they realize, wow, look at all that time I wasted. I could have followed her lead. Why didn't I give myself as much permission as she gave herself? So all the lessons eventually get learned.
And that's exactly how I think. I think that way too, that, you know what, those people that are supposed to be with you at a certain part of your journey, they will be there, no doubt. And there's no question about it. And those that are not supposed to be there, whether they're blood, family, relatives or not, if they're not supposed to be a part of that journey or to understand what it is that you're doing now with your life, they will not be, and there's nothing that you can do to convince them that they need to understand.
And what if the best thing for someone else is feeling that you've abandoned them?
Yep.
That could be their call to make a new choice, right? To step up, to feel how they're feeling, to be aware of what caused it, and to decide that they want to feel as good and empowered as they just witnessed their friend or family member act.
You're right, because many later on in their years, they will go, you know what, if it wasn't for that divorce, if it wasn't for that, you know, person that took my money and never paid me back, if it wasn't for this, I mean, it's always if it wasn't for this drastic, you know, traumatic thing that happened, I probably wouldn't have been here or wouldn't have been doing what I'm doing now.
Right. Yeah. For anyone to kind of diminish themselves, to kind of stay small, stay where they are, to please other people, like, I think that's a direct sign that you are not living your truth, that you are not following your heart at all. Because it's, you know, some people call it selfish, and I see it as selfless. When you or I or anyone truly does what they're inspired to do, what makes them feel alive and happy and joyous, that serves everybody else, even if someone else doesn't like it, because it can be an example of your willingness, of your courage, of your ability to rise above.
And when they say life is too short, they never lied that life is too short. You're here one day and the next thing you're gone. So you know what? There's a book that I bought. I have been one person that I've believed in affirmations for the last 25 years, you know, that I know of, when I started doing personal development, you know, my own personal training as well as training others on personal development. And I hung on to affirmations. Can you talk a little bit about affirmations, what they are, and some of the ones that you have in your book of 200 affirmations?
Sure. Actually, the first book I wrote was 200 Powerful Positive Affirmations and 6 Superchargers to Put Them Work. And it became so popular, and I actually wrote a second volume. But affirmations were one of the first things that I really put into work for me. And an affirmation is really a thought. It's anything you say over to yourself. And I thought positive affirmations were just nonsense. And it's because I was so used to my negative affirmations, but I didn't realize they were negative affirmations, right? My mantra, without realizing it, was life sucks, and I'm not good enough, and I'm not worth it, and I can't do it. Those are all my repetitive thoughts. So those were affirmations. So positive affirmations is choosing to replace those. So I would work with affirmations by saying them over and over in my head. I would write down one affirmation 5 to 10 times each night and each morning. thoughts that I wanted to replace. So now my go-to thought right now, if I just stopped and emptied my head, I am whole, perfect, strong, powerful, loving, harmonious, and happy.
Wow.
I am whole, perfect, strong, powerful, loving, harmonious, and happy. And it took a lot of time and study and reading that over and over before it was automatic, before I put it in there. And one powerful way I love to use affirmations is to combine them with mirror work, meaning I just stand in front of the mirror, I look into my own eyes, and even that, just holding my own gaze, I couldn't do to begin with. Looking in my own eyes would make me cry, and I couldn't take it.
Wow.
But now I look into my own eyes, I love that sparkle, that light I see, and I say my affirmations there. And if there's an affirmation that, you know, I get tongue-tied over, I can only say it with a giggle, or I can't say it, that tells me that's the one I really need. So instead of feeling resistant to an affirmation, you go, oh, that's silly, that's nonsense. I'm like, oh, wait, you're so resistant to that one because it's your wound, right? That's your pain, and it's speaking to it. So be willing to feel some discomfort. If you're used to affirmations and you have like five of your favorites, you always say them and they don't challenge you at all, it's time to like find some new ones. It's time to get bigger and challenge yourself.
I think one of my favorite ones that I continuously say now, because, you know, that was a challenge because of my values, beliefs, and what people would say, is, you know what, I do want to have lucrative businesses. So now I wake up and say my income is constantly increasing, which is one of Louise Hay's favorite ones that she continuously said. And what that does is, you know, I'm open to ideas, people, places that will help me build those lucrative businesses that can help other people excel in their own lives as well as my own life.
Right.
You see? Yep. And let me share another one with you that I like about, that I say. It says, divine order is now established in my mind, my body, and my affairs. I see clearly and act quickly, and my greatest expectations come to pass in a miraculous way.
Beautiful.
And what that means is, guess what? Everything happens in its own divine time.
Mm-hmm.
I was just about to say, you know, to elaborate on that one, to say, you know, for a lot of people, you know, they want something and they want it now, or they give up before something happens. And there's not much patience on waiting on things to happen or putting a lot of, you know, whatever work that is desired for a desired outcome, you know, to happen. And then, you know, with the suicide thing, I think also, you know, some people give up because then they're so much into, you know, I mean, illness, they're so sick and not well, that without that help that they need to make sure that they can see the future and see, you know, what's happening in their life, it's difficult to see it, to live. What am I living for?
Yeah. And, you know, someone that's been depressed for a long period of time, that's been suicidal, or that keeps returning to it, you know, I challenge you to realize that you're getting something from that, right? There's something there. There's reward there. There's a comfort level there, or else you wouldn't keep choosing to go back, right? And I had to really stop and realize, like, wow, yeah. When I go into depression, when I choose to wallow in depression, when I choose to not get up out of bed, when I ignore all of my rituals, people come to my aid. People take care of me. I don't have to keep doing things. Wow, isn't that interesting? But eventually, it overwhelms. It's power. It goes beyond my choice now. It gets this momentum of feeling bad. But we wouldn't return if there wasn't a benefit. And it's not about blame, right? It's about responsibility. Do I want to continue to feel this bad? No, right? Do I really want to die? No. I don't want to continue living the way I'm living right now. Mm. So it's time for a different choice. It's time for different actions. You know, however many decades it took for you to get where you are right now, and if right now feels really bad, to expect one book or one podcast or one class to just turn it all around is a rather ridiculous notion. So we can all always feel a little bit better. And if you're open to noticing that little amount, great. But, you know, a trap that I had, wow, I feel better. Oh, now I feel worse. See, the feeling better was the lie. And like, no, it's just a habit. You got to keep pivoting and choosing better thoughts. Right? One of my favorite affirmations from Louise Hay is, it's only a thought, and a thought can be changed. So when I'm thinking about how to kill myself, when I'm thinking about how everything stinks, when I'm thinking about how what a loser I am, I'm like, wait, those don't feel good. I can remember to choose a different thought. And that's where it all starts.
The most important thing that readers will learn from Still Here, your book on how to succeed in life after failing at suicide?
That's great. What the most important thing? You know, it's really that there's another way. That no matter how unhappy you've been in the past, no matter how unhappy you might feel right now, you can feel good again. Suicidal thoughts show up when you don't see any options for yourself, but there are always infinite options, infinite choices available to us. And I'm willing to say all of those options feel a lot better than killing yourself.
Yes.
Right? So again, it starts with your choice. Decide that you want to feel better. Decide that you want to live.
And the resources, I know you probably have tapped into quite a few resources. Any resources that you would want to share with the audience?
Well, if you're really in a crisis,
yes.
If you're ever in that emotional point, you don't know how to reach out, there's a suicide hotline in the U.S., 1-800-273-TALK. I have called them. It's anonymous. There's no pressure. You can just relieve yourself of all the horrible thoughts, all the ideas, and have a great cry and feel some peace, feel something out of there. Beyond that, still here in the book, I list lots of different websites, lots of different ways to get more help. There are support groups for people that have lost people to suicide. There are support groups for people that have survived suicide attempts, as I have. There's a lot of support. That's really the point. And be willing to open up, be willing to ask, be willing to talk about it. You're not alone.
Yeah. Where can they get the book again?
The book is available right now as an ebook or a paperback from Amazon.com. And actually, the audiobook version of it, it should be available before the end of this month, before the end of December 2016, for sure. That's in production right now.
They're both available because
yes.
Because I listened to part of the audio ones today on Audible.
Good, you found them.
They're really good. Yeah, they were really
good.
So I listened to the audio part as well for those of you that, you know, want to listen to audio. So we're running down the show, and before I can end the show, I want to talk a little bit about the podcast For Real Men Feel. Because you know what? I've been doing motivation, inspiration work for years now, and I meet a lot of men because I have books that I've written, 24 books for motivation and inspiration, but they're all for women and teenagers. And men are always asking, what about us? So I was excited to see you addressing Real Men Feel. Tell me a little bit about it so that our audience can understand what you're doing with that podcast.
Great. Yeah, so it really comes from a place that as I was on my personal growth and learning about energy and self-improvement, all those classes, all those audiences were primarily women. And I got used to that. I was comfortable that way. Late last year, talk about following your heart. I really start getting like instincts and hunches and hits that I need to make something just for men. And then how many men out there aren't comfortable being the minority, being in a room full of women, aren't comfortable sharing with their buddies, think they're all isolated and wrong. And, you know, so many things about what it is to be a man, what it is to be masculine, they're just lies. They're masks. So I was thinking, well, what does a real man mean to me? And I just thought, well, wouldn't it be great if the notion of being a real man meant you were willing to feel? So I came up with the name. I made a private Facebook group and just let it organically grow. Then in February of 2016, I began a podcast called Real Men Feel. We are live each week. I have a co-host named Apio Hunter. He's also a coach who lives in Utah. And sometimes it's just us talking about whatever's showing up in our lives or in the news. Often we have guests. But it's all about giving men a space to share and to express and to honor all of their emotions. we're not telling people you should always be happy, you should always be smiling. No, it's like, allow yourself to feel angry, allow yourself to feel guilt, allow yourself to feel shame, and allow yourself to feel joy and happiness. Right? Before you're a man or before you're a woman, you're a human being. And the full emotional range of being human is really a gift to all of us.
So if I were to just put you on the spot and just ask you, because then, of course, there would be a lot of women that are probably listening to this podcast and say, are there any two or three things as a woman that I need to know on getting along with a man or understanding real man feeling? Would you have a couple points for me to understand?
Gadzooks, that's a tough one. Because a part of it is realizing that generalizations aren't usually accurate.
And that's a good one. I need you to say that.
But, my suggestion is to realize that, men and women are raised differently.
Yeah.
So you could be with a man wanting him to share what he feels, but all his life he's been told that's wrong.
Yeah.
So be willing, be open. Encourage him to speak. Tell him that he can share. Again, if this is what you want, let him know that he can share anything with you. But if that's what you ask for, if you want that emotional transparency, and then he shares something and it triggers you and you get it upset and you get mad, then, that's going to shut him down again.
And you know what? I wanted you to say that, so thank you for saying that, because then the first thing that I believe, in any relationship is to be able to be open yourself and to be authentic yourself. Because when you're being real and you allow your partner as a male to be real as well and to share their deepest part of their heart and emotions, and they can know that it's safe, you're not going to throw them back to him and say you're weak, you're a wimp, which is, how most men have been, taught that if you show your emotions, then you're a wimp and it's not good to show your emotions. But then, as you say, real men feel, and every individual human being feels. So it's not being wimpy to be able to feel and talk about it.
Yeah. And just because a man can't tell you how he's feeling, that doesn't mean he's not feeling.
Yeah.
Right? I want to make that clear too. But, the biggest thing that, the gift that I have with my wife is an openness that anything can be shared.
Yeah.
Right? And again, having an unconditional love, having an open support like that, doesn't mean you're not going to sometimes be angry. Right? You really loving someone means you love them even when you're pissed at them.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
so
true.
Let it be okay.
Yeah.
Like I've met couples that talk about how they schedule fights to make sure that everything's out in the open. All right, it's Wednesday. Now we got to fight. What are you pissed about me? What do you want to argue about? And I was like, wow. So it doesn't come out sideways. It doesn't come out at inopportune times. They schedule their times to bring up their grievances.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a new one that I've never had. So if I'm mad on Monday and our scheduled time is on Wednesday night, I have to wait until Wednesday night?
No, ideally, I would suggest, no, you allow it to be in the moment. But to make sure things don't get buried, if you've been in a habit of always ignoring it, maybe, having it scheduled, it gives you permission to bring it up then. But, I wouldn't think you would have to wait. If we were living together, I would not make you wait.
That is awesome. You know what, Andy? It's always a pleasure talking to you and catching up. So, any last words of wisdom that you might want to share with the audience? And once again, thank you for being a guest today.
Yeah, I would just say, give yourself a break.
Yeah.
Right? Every human being is doing the best they can. And when you give yourself that space, when you can look at other people you don't agree with, just realize, what if that thing they're doing that I think is insane, what if that's their best idea at the time? Don't take it personally. Don't give a big judgment on it. Just everyone's doing the best they can.
How can they get in touch with you? Because I have a feeling that there will be men that listen to this and want to be guests or want to come to that retreat for real men feel that you all will be doing. So how can they get in touch with you or the energy to do the energy, work with you?
Yeah. My main website is navitascoach.com. That is navitascoach.com. And Navitas, by the way, is Latin for energy. And if you join my email list, you'll actually get a sample. You can get three different short guided meditations that will give you an experience of what energy work is like. There's also information about Real Men Feel there. And again, Real Men Feel is a weekly podcast. You can find it in iTunes. You can find it in Google Play. You can find it on YouTube. We've got, I think, 40 episodes done so far. And yeah, I'm always open to more people and guest ideas. You can reach me at andy@navitascoach.com via email.
Awesome. And now my favorite part, because, you know, I work with teenagers as well. So teenagers want to see the real you, because as adults, we're always telling them, don't do this and don't be this and don't do that. And we're all, you know, not showing our real selves sometimes, and they can see right through it. So for this section, which you gave me this idea, I love it, and I'm going to make sure that every guest will share with us 5 fun facts that you want the audience to know about you. So let's start with you. What are the 5 fun facts that the audience need to know about Andy?
Let's see. Well, my first tattoo I ever got was actually inspired by the wrestler Hulk Hogan. But what it says grateful, and which doesn't make me think of wrestlers or Hulk Hogan. But I noticed him in an interview. He was showing off a tattoo on his wrist, and it said grateful. And I was like, wow, now that's a tattoo. I could have that and be glad to have that forever. And that was my first tattoo. You know, again, I'm a motivational speaker. I teach lots of workshops and classes, but I was not always this way. I actually dropped out of my first college to avoid a mandatory public speaking class that was required. And I went from straight A's to straight F's because I wanted no part of it. I was in that much fear.
Wow.
So again, whatever your temporary circumstances, it doesn't mean that's where you always will be, right? Because now I love speaking and talking to people and meeting people, but I had no idea that that was ever something possible for me.
Wow.
And my college nickname was Metal. I used to have hair. Right now, I have a shaved head, but I used to have hair down to the mid of my back. And I listened to nothing but heavy metal, and that was my nickname. And actually, a few of my roommates still call me Metal.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, I'll get one more.
One more. All right. Well, I guess I'll stick with the metal vein. I've been a card-carrying member of the Kiss Army since 1976, and so I was a little boy, and I've seen the band Kiss well over 25 times. The last time I counted it was 25. That was years ago.
One band over 25 times?
Yeah.
Well, Andy, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And before I end the show, I want to share with people a dose of motivation and encouragement. You are God's divine creation. You are born with the ability to heal, to start again, to dream, to believe and act, and also to achieve whatever it is that you focus on. God's supernatural favor, power, and mercy are available to you. So your guilt, procrastination, disobedience, anger, self-worth, all those emotions, they block your blessings. So start creating new habits, new thoughts, new breakthroughs, new friendships that will build you up as we go into a new 2017. I say to you, be unstoppable and live fiercely out loud.